Buzz Bissinger joins us on Sports Byline. You certainly know him as a best-selling author of classics like Friday Night Lights and Three Nights in August. And his latest offering is the Classic Mantle with photographs by American photography icon Marvin Newman. You know, this book is different from any of the other books that you've put out, Buzz, and it has a different feel to it. Tell everybody what makes this one a little bit different.
Well, you know, I think it's different. It's really much more of a personal essay than a full-fledged book. The pictures by Marvin Newman are wonderful. And it was, you know, meant to be a short book. Now, I never met Mickey. I wish that I had. I obviously saw him play. I grew up in New York. And I think the book is just much more of kind of a personal experience and personal assessment of a man who was a great, great baseball player, but also one of the most complex and remarkably flawed athletes of our time, if not the most complex. And I think that's what attracted me to do this.
How hard is it to write about somebody, especially somebody who's as iconic as Mantle is, when you have never had a chance to interview him?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and I had help. You know, I worked at one time on a book with Bob Costas, and Bob and I have since become very, very good friends. And Bob has talked a lot about Mickey, his relationship with Mickey, so I felt that at least I had that I knew someone, you know, who would really shed a light on what Mickey was like. And then, you know, it's like anything else, you read a lot. Jane Levy's book was fantastic, I thought. Some of Mickey's own books that he wrote were fantastic. And, you know, I had a very kind of distinct impression of Mickey when he played, and I followed his career. I worked in Atlantic City for the Philadelphia Inquirer, so I knew he had become a greeter, which he hated. I will never forget the interview he did with Bob, I think on NBC Sports, in which I've never seen anyone so brutally honest about themselves in their lives when he admitted to being an alcoholic and the shame that he felt. So I was obviously, you know, drawn to Mickey as not just a remarkable baseball player, but really, you know, a remarkable man who was willing to admit faults unlike anyone I've ever seen. And I really grew, you know, to admire him.
You know, when you look across the landscape of sports, there are certain names that are iconic with those sports. I mean, Mantle and Mays in baseball, Namath in football, Jordan in basketball, Gretzky in hockey. What is it about the Mantle name that makes it so iconic?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Ron. I mean, I say in the book, you know, if his name had been Steve Mantle, I actually think it would have been very, very different. I mean, he was so American and such a piece of Americana coming in. I mean, you know, where does he grow up? In Commerce, Oklahoma. You know, what does his dad do? You know, he works in the zinc mines. It's awful, awful work. And so here is this kid in the middle of nowhere, you know, going to Joplin, Missouri is a big deal for him. And, you know, he's discovered by a Yankee scout almost magically. His name is Mickey, you know, Mickey Mantle. It's got that alliteration. It's got Mickey, and he's just such a quintessential American character. And then he comes, he's playing for the Yankees. He's replacing another icon in Joe DiMaggio. He is magnificently skilled, despite having so many injuries, you know, to his legs. And he's got power. He's got speed. And he also, which I found fascinating, for a small-town kid, embraces New York and loves the city, and the city mostly loves him back. And, you know, he was great in the clutch. He hit, I think he still may hold the record for most World Series home runs, and there really was never, I don't think there's ever been an athlete quite like him, because then it goes beyond to what he was like, you know, after his playing days.
I spent an hour with him when his book came out, and I was touched by a lot of the things that he said because of the honesty that you mentioned. But I also think, and correct me if you think I'm wrong about this, Buzz, I also believe that the demons that he had to fight throughout his life and his career only added to the mystique and the interest in Mickey Mantle.
I think that's right, and I think that, you know, to me, there's sort of three phases of Mickey's life. There's certainly the, you know, the playing career when he was magical, although, you know, New York had a kind of funny relationship with him. Casey Stengel had a very funny relationship with him. I mean, you know, George Weiss, there was a lot of people in the Yankee front office who felt, as did Mickey, you know, Mickey, as great as you are, you never realize your potential. You didn't work out in the off season. You didn't take care of yourself. You drank too much. I mean, fans kind of turned against him in the late 50s. Then he had that great 61 season. And then really for the rest of his career, you know, he was treated gently because he was kind of the old soldier. That was the first phase. And in the second phase, he kind of pretty much, I think, disappeared from life. You know, he was just a great baseball player, and you hear a little bit about him here and a little bit about him there, and he was working in Atlantic City. And then there was that third phase that began when he went into Betty Ford, and he was treated for alcoholism, and he was just brutally, brutally honest about his shortcomings. And I don't think he was doing it, you know, for an Oprah moment. I think it was the only way he could deal with the shame that he had felt all his life, and I think it gave him an honest dignity, and I think people were just remarkably touched by that and also remarkably moved by the fact that, like so many members of his family, he died of cancer at a very, very young age.
Yeah, the feeling that I got was the fact that before he left this planet, he wanted to set the record straight.
That's exactly right.
And then the other aspect that also jumped out at me was the very convoluted relationship he had with his father.
Well, I think I say in the book, I mean, you know, Freud would have had a field day trying to figure out the two of them. He loved his dad. He was scared of his dad. His dad loved him. His dad was desperate for him not to repeat the life that he had had working in those hideous, zinc mines. That the work was terrible. He knew that Mickey could be a great player. He wanted him to get out of commerce. But he was also relentless in, you know, Mickey, do this, Mickey, do that. You know, Mickey would, at 8 or 9 years old, would say, Dad, I'm hungry. I want to have dinner. And he'd say, no, forget dinner. You know, you're going to learn how to switch hit. And he grew up always with this sense that he had disappointed his dad. And I think that never, ever left him. And I think that disappointment spread. And I think there was a part of Mickey that always felt, I am a disappointment. I've disappointed the man in my life I love the most, and I haven't taken care of myself, and I really am a disappointment. I've never reached my full potential, so, you know, Mutt gave him the ability to become a Yankee in many ways, but I think his father also filled him with a tremendous sense of shame that I think he still had until he died.
Do you think that one of the major driving forces for Mickey Mantle was his fear of failure?
I think it was his. I think it's interesting. I think it was his fear of failure, and yet he always felt he had failed. I mean, I think the shadow of his father. His father died right at the end of his rookie year. I mean, bizarrely, they were in the hospital together because Mickey got hurt during the 51 World Series, and then his father was actually taking him to the hospital, and he collapsed, and then his father died of cancer quite quickly. I think there was fear of failure, and I think, as you said, I think Mickey's father always existed, and I think there was that fear of disappointing his father, of not living up to his father's expectations, and I think that's what motivated him. But as I say, I think that's also what filled him with this kind of incredible sense of shame. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough for my dad. I'll never be good enough. So it really, you know, almost created a split personality.
What did you find as far as the 1962 season about the way he felt about it and the enduring factors of that season?
Now, the 1962 season was when they played the San Francisco Giants.
Right.
Frankly, I didn't dwell on that season that much. What was interesting to me in doing the research was, as I said, Yankee fans were kind of mixed about Mickey. The 59 season had been very disappointing. The Yankees, did not win the pennant. The Chicago White Sox did. What Mickey himself said and others said, it was the 61 season that really turned around fans because of the Maris Mantle home run derby. And as you know, people just loathed Roger Maris. I mean, they just did. They loathed him because they felt that, you know, it was Babe Ruth's record. They loathed him because they think they felt he wasn't really a Yankee. Roger had a very difficult time handling the media, and, you know, Mickey got hurt at the end. And Mickey said, ironically, it was almost better that I didn't win the home run title and set the record of 61 homers because, you know, in a sense, people felt sorry for me, and they liked me better. And he said that really turned around my career in terms of how Yankee fans, you know, felt about me.
This book is a wonderful book because it's a blending of your words and also photography by Marvin Newman. Now, he had a relationship with Mickey. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, Marvin, unlike me, had known Mickey, you know, for the entirety of his career. I mean, Marvin first photographed him in 1951. They became very, very friendly. Marvin took a great liking to Mickey, and Mickey took a great liking to him. And, you know, I'm envious because when you look at the pictures in the book, I mean, he just captures not just Mickey in his totality, but an era of baseball in the 1950s and the beauty of those pinstripes and the smiles of Hank Bauer and Billy Martin and the grumpiness of Casey Stengel. It was a different game, and there was, I think, you know, a greater sense of innocence to it. I mean, these guys didn't make that much money, although Mickey did pretty well. But you still had the sense they were boys, and you know, they were boys playing a boys' game, and some often playing it beautifully. But they were boys who were naughty and going out and going to the Copacabana, and drinking and smoking cigarettes. And I think what's great about Marvin's pictures, in particular, is he really does capture the love, the absolute love and worship that they really did have of each other. So they're the kind of pictures that I can just stare at forever, particularly when you see pictures of Mickey when he was a rookie player. I mean, it just sort of gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, the simplicity is the thing that touched me. And the cover picture, the one that you have on the cover, is just amazing because it makes him look like he is a young kid that really loves the game because it's a game, not that it was a business. And certainly back then it wasn't the business that it is today.
Yeah, I think you put it beautifully. I love that. I mean, I love that front photo exactly for that reason. It was back in the day when baseball, it wasn't a business. It was a game that these guys loved, and I think it was a game that these guys would have played for nothing. And we all know that they got screwed. And, you know, I mean, I think going from 60 to 61, I think Mickey took a pay cut or was from 59 to 60. I mean, what player of that caliber today would take a pay cut? You know, nobody. But they played the game for the love of it. And I think that's what that picture really represents on the cover, and it's also something that you know struck me about Mickey when he played, although you know he was still disappointed. He just never ever felt that he had done enough. And listen, Mickey made terrible mistakes. He was an alcoholic. He cheated on his wife. He was a lousy father. This was not a perfect human being by any stretch of the imagination. But what makes him so attractive to me was the honesty with which he publicly admitted his faults. You know, not for an Oprah moment, not to sell a book, but because I think he felt obligated to try to explain to fans why there were moments when he could be so surly and so rude and so nasty after he retired.
We only have a minute left, Buzz, but did you ever get a feeling about why the Yankees were able to play hard, and play hard meaning on and off the field, but yet have all the success? Because usually when you play hard off the field, it takes its price somewhere else on the field.
Well, it does, but as you know, I mean, that was an era where you know, a lot of guys, were used to playing hard on and off the field, and I just think that was a way of life back then, and I think they had such a chemistry, and there was so much talent, and I think the chemistry had a lot to do with it, and I think, you know, for all the excess, there was a great feeling of pride, and, you know, putting on those Yankee pinstripes, look, it's a big thing now, but I think then, you know, you were the kings of the world. There was no franchise like the Yankees, and I think it had kind of a special magic to it that, you know, that has been lost. And, you know, these were guys, look, I don't know how Mickey did it. You know, it's a famous story. He got drunk the night before. He was completely hungover. He figured Casey wouldn't make him play. Casey got pissed at him. Made him pinch hit, and Mickey said, I don't know how I did it. I hit a home run. You know, and that's the kind of the way they played. But they loved the game. They played hard all the time. If you listen to people in baseball today, they will tell you it's very different. Guys really, with very rare, a few exceptions, only play hard when they need to. These guys played hard all the time.
Congratulations, Buzz, on this book. It's a wonderful one. Come back again and visit us.
Hey, I will. It's always great to talk to you.
Buzz Bissinger, the name of the book, The Classic Mantle. We continue on Sports Byline.